C1SP. Number 14B.
And so shows that spiritualism is based not on God, not on reality, but on human testimony, on human hypotheses, that it has its origin and its cause in the human thinking. That was the first subject. Having cleared that, she goes on and says, and these two universes never really blend with each other. Spiritualism says they do, but that's a human testimony. But reality says, no, spirit has identity and therefore remains spiritual and therefore can never commune with something which is opposite to its own identity. Showing us what? Showing us that the spiritual sense of life, the spiritual sense of the universe, that can never mingle and be mixed up with the material sense of life or the universe, because they are opposites. They have opposite cause, they have opposite nature, they have an opposite authority behind it, so they are opposites, and because they are opposites, they can never mingle or blend. Spiritualism says they can, and therefore put up a medium between them, a bridge between them, a medium which they say either the medium is a spirit, or the medium is a mortal thinking, a mortal thinking which shows itself in a science of concentration of mortal thought, and that through that medium one can get in touch with the spiritual, and or it is through a dead person which as an immortal spirit speaks through the material senses. See, spiritualism always tries in various ways to put up a medium. Well, science also has a medium, really. And that medium is science itself, is understanding. And it is that which says, yes, it's true, we can understand and can commune with spirit, but only through its own nature, only through spiritual laws, only through spiritual order, only on account of a spiritual rule. We have the medium to commune with God's spirit through the medium of science, of spiritual science. That's the communication. In fact, that's our salvation. If that wouldn't be so, we may find ourselves right out of the universe of harmony. But as we have seen right from the first chapter, that which is godlike always can reach and get in touch with that which is of the nature of divinity. The mind-like always can commune with the divine mind. The spirit-like can always commune with spirit. The soul-like can always commune with soul, and so on. And so brings in science, the purity of spirit, which says, yes, spirit expresses itself in a spiritual way, through spiritual means, to a spiritual facts and as spiritual facts, but never deviates into its opposite. That's the second subject. Then the third subject goes just a little step further and says, as there is no mingling and blending between opposites, therefore the spiritual can never fall back, can never lose its standard or its integrity or its identity. And so that third subject tells us that the spiritual sense of existence cannot be transferred back to its opposite, cannot be transferred back into a material sense of existence. That the angels of God have never fallen, as the belief goes, that man is a fallen angel, that the mortal is a fallen angel. That's a belief of spiritualism. Whereas here we can see that if spirit has identity, then soul tells us of this immutable identity, of this immutable identity which is changeless and therefore can never be changed into its opposite, can never lose its standard, can never fall back to something to which is the opposite of perfection. That's the third. Then, as you know, we have that little mystery that there is not the fourth subject, but that she goes on right to life, to the fifth subject, where she shows that because spirit is the only reality, and because spirit is life, that therefore only that life is life which is spiritual. Consequently, that the belief that life is material, that life has been born into matter, that life lives in matter, that life dies in matter, and afterwards that life has to be raised out of matter, resurrected out of matter, that these spiritualistic beliefs are not in accordance to the scientific logic. That if spirit is all and spirit is God and God is life, that therefore this life is always spiritual, and that therefore life could never lose its identity and therefore could never die. It can never die into matter and therefore can never be resurrected out of matter. And so the scientific analysis with which a very practical scientific analysis, that scientific practical analysis which we should notice practically 1,000 times each day, because the lie about it tells us always the opposite, is that we live in life and not in matter, and that our life is in the divine life and never has been born into matter, never lived in matter, never can die in matter, and can never be resurrected out of matter. It's that point where we begin to see that if we understand spiritually that life can never die, that is the only resurrection. We resurrect ourselves out of a belief in death. We can never resurrect ourselves out of a fact that life has died in body and must be resurrected. Such a thing doesn't exist. That's what spiritualism tries to give the counter proof. But the fact is that we must see that our true being always existed in life, never left that life, because our soul has told us before, it has never fallen away from life. It has never been transformed back from life, from spiritual life into material life. And if we have accepted that proposition, then it's much more easier to begin to demonstrate the fifth proposition here, that we live and move and have our being in life and in spiritual life. And there isn't hardly anything more freeing than to see that our life has never had a beginning in matter, a birth into matter, that our whole past experience was not the experience of life, but an experience of a belief in material living and a belief in social living and a belief in a business living and so on, but never the reality of life. And we begin to free ourselves right out of that narrow concept that what our body or our person has gone through was our life. That's not true. That's a lie. It isn't true. And so Mr. Zinni says, quite right, that we have to awake ourselves out of the belief that all must die. Not only that we have to wake ourselves of the belief that I will once die, but that all will die. We must see that life is God, and that is infinite, infinite in space and time and possibilities, and that life was never in body, neither here nor in Africa nor in this century nor 1,000 years ago. You see, we begin to resurrect our sense of life right out of the belief of material living, of material birth, of material education, of material experience, of a material past, of a material future, and of death in matter. Let's get out of it. If life is spirit, then life is spirit and not matter. Then she goes to the sixth subject and shows, in the measure as you understand that, in the measure as you understand that life is spirit, you begin to free yourself of a material concept of man. The material concept of man then disappears. And perhaps you remember how there she brings in always that relative sense that in the measure, or when it will be understood, then the false concept of life and of man will be destroyed. She says that until we have understood that life is infinite, until then we may go on under the belief of a material existence and of man being material. Showing that this whole solution lies in consciousness, lies in the realization of the individual realization of each one of us on this great point of life: is life spiritual or material? The individual consciousness on this point is the Christ, we are in the tone of truth, is the Christ to our false concept of man. Now, this sounds perhaps academical, but it only sounds academical if one has never prayed and struggled about it. Prayer always comes in and says, well, do I desire that? Do I struggle for that? Do I keep to that vision? Do I keep to that vision in spite of the physical sense? And only then each one really experiences a liberation from the belief of a material manhood. And little by little, as she says here so gently, it's coming step by step. It's not done in one hop, in one moment. But in that ratio, it does liberate us from the belief, and it's one of the most wonderful experiences we can have, that little by little, though it may be just always a little bit, but one stone next to the other makes finally a big mountain. We come to the realization that is only manhood which is living the life of God. That only that in our experience which is living the life of God in a spiritual way, that only that really is our manhood, and that the whole rest of it is just a bag of tricks. So the clear analysis, you see, science, we are in the chapter on science. The moment we take the standpoint of science, we never ask anymore if the five physical senses agree to it or not. We never ask anymore if the human beliefs agree to it or not. We are never asking anymore if the other people agree to it or not. The moment one takes the standpoint of science, one is quite happy with the logic of this science as the only proof for it. That's the point. But if we do, we really go somewhere. If we don't, we always fall back. We always fall back to spiritualism, to beliefs. And therefore we never progress. We can study the books hundreds of years. We'll never progress if there is not that scientific line which says, and that line I take, and that line I follow, and I follow it in spite of what mortal mind says, and I follow it in spite of what matter says, and in spite of what the physical senses say, and in spite of what people say, and in spite of what the ordinary concept of organic life has always said. If I can do that, I come to truth. Then spiritual consciousness begins to throw out, to oust out of my consciousness a material concept of manhood. And that's the Christ. That liberates, and it does liberate. Then she comes to the last subject of love, where she shows that therefore, because spirit is God, and because spirit is all, spirit being love therefore must bless always and all, and therefore will never tolerate spiritualism. We never tolerate spiritualism, which is never blessing. There is no blessing in spiritualism. Spiritualism has no Christ. Spiritualism is a belief that can intrigue the human mind very much. Spiritualism is a belief that shows extraordinary phenomena to the human mind. Spiritualism, in the last analysis, is always a curse. It's wretched. It's wretched in tendency. It asks us to rely on something besides God. Something more wretched than that I can't think of. It asks us to rely on the counterfeit of God. It asks us to rely on beliefs, on supernatural phenomena which can't be explained. Therefore a mystery, on unintelligence. It asks us all that. It asks us all that which is the counterfeit of God. And so the beliefs of spiritualism finally always lead mankind down the dregs, always. They wither in their health, their joy goes away, their self-confidence goes away. They are no more men who have a God and who turn to a God. They become creepy, weak people who, at the first instance when they have a difficulty, they have to run to a spiritualistic seance and ask a mortal spirit, just finite as anything is finite, what to do about it. It's finite. And so let's see that love blesses all, and that therefore we have the right of being blessed. And therefore to see that if we go through those seven stages, or through the first six stages, that is always a blessing. That can never be turned into its opposite. Mortal mind will say it turns you into the opposite. Mortal mind will tell you if you go the line of spirit, you will just be licked. The material world will just lick you. That's what it will tell us. But it's not true. It is not true. It's only true as long as we go the line of spirit half-heartedly, or only with our intellect, or only with our interest, then it will lick us. Because that's not science, that's spiritualism, in the name of science. But if we go it wholeheartedly, entirely, it does always bless. It can't help but bless. And so spiritualism is licked. That's what he shows there. Well, these are the subjects of the first part. Now, let's go over that again and again. See, sometimes I feel a meeting like this is like when a conductor has an orchestra and tries to, what you call any probe? A rehearsal. He always goes over it and says, now stop again, let's go right from the beginning again, let's see that clear again, and make those rehearsed and rehearsed. That's the rhythm of spirit. That brings the birth of spirit. So let's have some rehearsals. Always go over it until we can see it clearer and more tangible. See, what this first part wants to show, we also saw that it has an overall tone of soul and life. of soul and life. What does that mean? It has the overall tone that spirit has identity, soul. A spirit has identity, therefore that spirit remains spirit and is spirit, never falls away from being what it is. And as spirit has identity, that status is life. That status is the reality. That's what life wants to bring out. That which has divine identity, spiritual identity, that alone is that soul and life. It only goes around this question, you see. It's first an analysis which conveys to us first a clarification in our thought, well, what on earth are the identities of being, those identities which exist in reality, spirit, in reality. And so she says, all right, I tell you, she says, well, God is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Therefore, because mind has identity, because mind is God, and mind has identity, therefore mind never creates anything which is unlike itself, never creates something finite. It always creates anything in infinite idea. That's the starting point. That's the identity of being. That mind creates its universe only in its own identity as ideas. The second subject says, yes, and because spirit has identity too, because spirit has identity, it never can communicate with or through its opposite. Says, because spirit has identity, it has identity. It cannot fall away from its own nature, and therefore cannot communicate with its opposite, or through its opposite. It stays spirit. Therefore spirit, because it has identity, does only communicate itself through what it is, through spiritual means, spiritual laws, spiritual order, spiritual lure, through a spiritual system, and so on. And she goes on and says, because God is soul, and soul has identity, it's unchangeable. It doesn't change its nature. It doesn't change its identity. It stays what it is. Therefore, it can never fall away from its high standard. And we have that concept that God is unchangeable, and because God is unchangeable, the ideas of God are unchangeable too. They never fall back on it to its opposite. It says, because life has identity, it remains life, and so it can never die. It corrects the belief that it can never die. It just is. It corrects that thought in us that something is not and should be, or that something is and could disappear. It corrects all that. It corrects that and says, no, life has identity, and because it has identity, it remains life, and remains life, and nothing can make it disappear. This shows, because truth has identity, that it can never tolerate an existence which is erroneous. Because truth has identity, it can never tolerate erroneous existence. Wonderful. If I begin to realize the identity of truth, then I begin to realize that it's only belief to believe in an erroneous situation. And that's the only reality, so-called reality, there is about the erroneous situation which I have to face is only belief. And that it is not, because truth has identity, and only that which has identity is. Wonderful. I begin, whatever the situation is, to see that that which is true alone is. And that therefore our own situation can't be. Can only fool us. That's all that can. But it cannot be. I have no right to say, but I see with my eyes, experience with my life an erroneous situation. I have no right to say that that erroneous situation is. I can only say, I'm a fool to believe in it. But I can never say it is, because there's no life. There's no life. And so, lastly, she shows that because love has identity, that it is always inclusive and universal, and therefore it can never tolerate its opposite of love, namely never tolerate the curse and the wretchedness and the absurdity of spiritualism. Because we need to be freed from spiritualism. We need to be freed from spiritualism because morning, noon and night the claims of spiritualism tries to drag us down. That claim of spiritualism which says you are a spirit, you are a god, you can do things by yourself, but you are a bit limited, but you are a bit good, a bit bad, and so on. That's all belief in spiritualism. It's not turning to the one spirit, to the one god. It's turning to one's own person, to a limited belief. So having seen that, say having stated that, I can ask myself, well, what does this first part really mean to us or to me practically? What is the practicality of this first part, of seeing this first part? Well, the practicality of it is that in my life, in my practice, in my everything, where I have to solve a situation, where I have to see clear, that I have to turn to this one spirit and not to spirits. That I have to turn to one standard, to one standpoint only, and never to two. That I have only to take one standpoint, that standpoint of God, and never consider two standpoints, two arguments, two opposite arguments. And so I begin to see in my practical application of the first part, I always begin to see, well, that if mind is infinite, oh, that's the end of it. We stop here.